This is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Tom Clark here with Family Doc Zorba Pastor. Zorba, through the rest of this hour, talking with you about what's new in healthy living, sharing some down-to-earth advice and some great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. Want to talk with Zorba? Here's the number to call. 800-462-7413. 800-462-7413. Some interesting research, Zorba, to talk about?
Yes, a biological basis for being a couch potato. This is not your excuse. This is your raison d'etre, Tom. You'll love this study.
Don't blame me.
You'll love it.
Blame the genes. What else?
Postpartum depression affects moms. Does it affect dads? Interesting research on that.
Oh, so maybe postpartum affects dads as well?
It may affect them, absolutely.
And a listener-supplied recipe.
That's right. It's breakfast, and it's a great recipe. It's a great idea. Strawberry, rhubarb, oatmeal. We neglect breakfast in our society. Good evidence that eating a good breakfast will reduce your weight.
This one comes from Elaine Hunter in Kentucky, and we'll be talking with her in just a little while here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. That number again, 800-462-7413. Zorba, a listener with us now in Indianapolis, Indiana. Hi.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
We appreciate your calling. How can we help?
My husband has an issue. Mm-hmm. Every evening when it's just becoming time to relax for the evening, mm-hmm. he begins this neck and shoulder sort of twitch.
Twitch.
He will turn his head sort of like almost like a tick, and he will, sort of almost shrug his shoulders, the muscles in his neck sort of flex, you know, just repeatedly on and off.
How long does it go on?
It comes and goes. If he concentrates on it, he can make it go away. Now, see, this is what I think, that he just needs to learn how to relax.
He just needs to learn how to relax. It's not always easy to do, as you know. You know, we all know, gee, I should ought to relax, but you never do it. But so he has this twitchy kind of neck. What does he do for a living? Is he like an air traffic controller, so he's always craning his neck and looking around? Or, you know, does he work in a submarine, so he's down and crunched up? But is he a plumber, because they work in small places? What does he do for a living?
No, he has a desk job. He works for the Department of Defense.
I don't think that that's exactly the type of job that I would call where the neck makes it. So he twitches around. So right in front of your eyes, it kind of goes left and right and up and down. What does he do?
Right, and you know, he just will turn his head and his muscles kind of flex, and he just, you know.
I know what he needs. He needs for you to give him a neck massage every time he comes home from work. That will be so wonderful for him. Hi, honey, I'm glad to see you home. Let me give you that 10 or 15-minute neck massage. That'll take care of all of it, don't you think?
Oh, believe me, we've tried that.
Oh, you have tried that. Okay, because I thought, in all seriousness, a massage can make a big difference. Now, what happens when he tries to go to sleep at night?
He often has trouble sleeping at night. Mm-hmm. He will, you know, move a lot in bed when he's trying to go to sleep at night. He, you know, how everybody has those dreams like they're, you know, falling and then crash.
Absolutely,
you know?
Absolutely.
He does that a lot in bed. Just his whole body will just.
Does he like his job? Is his job stressful?
He hates his job.
He hates his job. That's what I thought.
He's getting ready to retire.
That's what I thought. He hates his job.
Well, didn't I jump in? What do you do when you're with the Department of Defense in Indianapolis, Indiana?
He works for the Defense Finance and Accounting Service, DFAS, right here at the big old center in Indianapolis.
Yeah, that's what it is. It's not all. Yeah,
gotcha.
I mean you're stuck in the Pentagon. Everyone for the Department of Defense works in that. Yeah.
But anyway, job hating would be a pretty good.
But I think you hit it on the tail. I think part of the issue may be relaxation. At the end of his job, it's trouble because you know he doesn't like his job. He's unhappy, and the stress is coming out in terms of muscle actions, and especially if it affects sleep and other things. I've got a couple of very specific suggestions, and the massage I meant in a light way, but I also meant that can be an issue. Neck exercises. You can look at them on the web. You can go to a physical therapist. May be very, very useful. He comes home from work, takes a warm, moist washcloth or a heating pad, or you can buy things that you heat up in the microwave. You put it in the back of your neck, and you do range of motion exercises, and you relax those muscles. A lot of people get this, men and women. They're sitting at their desk all day. They're looking at their computer, and they're holding their neck in a stiff way. Heat to the muscle can make a difference. Manipulation of the muscle with massage. Sometimes chiropractic manipulation can be very, very useful in a case like this. I send patients to chiropractors for this all of the time. That's one step. The other step is he's not retired yet. He doesn't like his job. This may be depression. And and one issue is, if it is depression, go and see your primary care doc. They treat most of the depression in America today. Third of the people are helped with drugs only, antidepressants, very effective. Third of the people, therapy only, very effective. Third of the people need both. And I would look towards that as another issue. He's not retired yet. He's got to go back. He's got stress on the job, and he may need an antidepressant or some therapy, and that might be worthwhile. Finally, getting together and giving mutual massages can be very good, not only for the neck, but for the relationship. And that relationship can be so important, especially if you're going through the stressors that obviously, you know, he's going through and you're going through with him because you're part of him and his life. So good luck.
That's great advice. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for the call.
Bye. 800-462-7413.
800-462-7413. So, Zorba, a biological basis for being a couch potato.
It makes you so happy to actually have this. This is a study. Now, what animals do you think were used in this study?
What animals?
Yes, that's right. That's right. It's a study.
Well,
it's
let's see. I'm
study.
A couch potato, and that's I've right. often been called
that's
a
right.
rat.
That's right. That's exactly so. That. These are brains of rat who are basically bred to produce a brain chemical. This is sort of an internal brain hormone called orexin, and it stimulates appetite and spontaneous movements such as fidgeting, you know, this unconscious fidgeting. And they found that lean rats, the rats who were lean, who didn't like sit around and get obese and not do much, had a far greater expression of this orexin receptors in their brain. In other words, this particular receptor was highly active. And as a result, they fidgeted, they moved around, they did things, they went out, they exercised, they jogged, they did the usual things that rats do when they're not fat. And the ones who didn't have the expression of this one gene were fat and lazy and ate and sat around and didn't do much. And so it might be, and we know, for instance, that unconscious movement, fidgeting and moving around, can easily burn up 300 to 500 calories a day. I don't have a weight problem, and I find myself continuously moving around.
Yeah.
And so the answer is, if you're a couch potato and you have it, it may be that it's this genetic issue with this one receptor, and what we learned from rats, we might be able to apply to humans.
But see, I'm a fidgety person. I'm
yes,
a fidgety
that's right.
rat,
that's right.
too.
That's right.
And I, maybe I'm not a legitimate couch potato.
Now, how many times do you walk your dog a day?
Oh, four or five minutes.
4 or 5 times a day you walk your dog.
Yeah.
And when you go out to walk the dog, how much time do you spend walking the dog?
Well, on a couple of longer walks, about a half an hour each
half
walk.
Half an hour each. So you're walking about 3 hours a day.
No, not that quite. Two, I'd say.
2 hours a day. Now, do you think that most Americans are walking about 2 hours a day?
No.
Most Americans walk. I read this. I don't know if it's true or not, but I read this the other day. 300 yards a day.
Oh, come on.
300 yards
That's
a
the
day
average?
Is what the average American walks.
Oh,
now,
my goodness.
Now, once again, this was a non-verified study, so I don't know if it's true. But even if they walk 600 yards a day, it's not much.
Yeah.
It's not much. So the fact is you are not a couch potato.
They can say.
You like to sit on the couch, but you're not the potato.
Those who walk only 200 or 300 yards a day can say, don't blame me.
Don't blame me. Blame
the genes.
It's in the genes. I got it, baby. It's in the genes.
800-462-7413. Question for Zorba? Give a call. A listener with us now, Zorba, actually our first caller from ever from Buenos Aires, Argentina. Hi.
Hi, guys. How y'all doing?
Fine. Are you listening to us on the web, I assume?
That's correct. Listening to you and talking to you on the web.
Zorba, you do that.
That's right. So are you talking on Skype on the web?
That's right.
Talking on Skype. My daughter's in BA, and we talk on Skype all the
BA
time.
BA meaning Buenos Aires.
Sorry. Right. Those in the know.
Fantastic.
Wow. Unbelievable. You listen on the web, and you're talking to us on the VoiceOver Interactive Protocol. Fabulous.
Great. So how can we help?
Well, guys, about 2 months ago, I took a trip home to Knoxville, Tennessee, where I'm from originally. And during this time, for about 2 weeks straight, I spent, you know, roughly 8 hours a day fly fishing. And I began developing the symptoms of tennis elbow, or in this case, fisherman's elbow, during this 2 weeks. It sort of progressed and got worse. And when I got back down here to Argentina, it continued to hurt quite a bit. And so I laid off on the exercise. I was icing the arm, et cetera, and nothing seemed to help me out at all. So ultimately, I was forced to visit a doctor who, of course, gave me a good shot of cortisone, which made the problem go away pretty promptly. At the time, he mentioned to me that if it comes back, there is a procedure, about a 10-minute procedure, surgery, that he could do to solve the problem. Now, it's starting to come back. It's been another month since the shot, I think, and it's beginning to hurt me again. And being no stranger to joint pain nor surgery of joints, having had both my knee and my shoulder operated on previously, I want to, if at all possible, of course, avoid more cortisone as well as avoid going under the knife. And I was wondering if you might give me some advice.
Well, I don't think I would have the surgery. That's my first piece of advice. We don't do much surgery for an extensor tendonitis, which is what you have basically from this fly fishing. So I wouldn't recommend the surgery. I'd recommend a couple of things. First of all, now fly fishing, you don't fly fish, so there's no fly fishing in Argentina. You had to come back to the U.S. to fly fish?
No. I had to come back to the U.S. to take care of some business.
There is
fly fishing in Argentina, yeah. And I should say this is not an unusual thing for me to do. In fact, a couple months prior to my trip to Tennessee, I was in Patagonia fishing for 3 weeks straight without problem. And so this is a recent development.
I know fly fishermen and fly fisherwomen, and it's an addiction. You know, once they start, you know, I always tell my kids, be careful of fly fishing. You know, say no, just say no.
No to cigarettes, booze, and fly fishing.
Just say no, and then you'll be okay. Otherwise, the rest of your life will be ruined looking for that ultimate fly fishing. But a couple of things that I would recommend. That first of all, I would recommend a non-invasive thing. You get something called a tennis elbow splint. Now, you can buy them in Argentina at a medical supply store. They are basically straps that go around the elbow, and you wear it for 2 to 3 weeks. That's what you wear it, up to a month. And these are basically a tight sort of a strap that's there. You can buy them on the web, but I don't know if you can get it shipped over there. But they make them. I'm sure they make them there. And they're kind of maybe 3 inches around, and you can make them very, very tight. And what they do is they change the way the fibers are working in the elbow. They're very effective in about 50% of the people. You wear it for a month. Number two, take an anti-inflammatory drug. You can buy it there. Naproxen, 500 milligrams twice a day. That's roughly it. A little more, a little less won't matter. But you can go to the drugstore and get that. That's what I would recommend doing. I would do that for a month. If that fails, then I would go to another cortisone shot. But I wouldn't do the cortisone shot right away. I would do that first. The chances are that your pain is going to go down with that. Now, the real issue is the fly fishing. You have to wear a tennis elbow splint when you're fly fishing, and then you have to figure out what it is in the fly fishing that you maybe have to do differently. Just like people who have golfer's elbow and who really have tennis elbow from tennis, they learn how to swing differently, and the pain tends to go away. You're doing something with fly fishing that's too repetitive for your muscles.
Sure, of
course. And you can do it, but you got to figure out how to vary it and how to change it and how to use your shoulder muscles more. And ultimately, you want to build up the forearm muscles because that's what you have to do after the pain goes away. Because if you make your forearm much stronger, so you become sort of an Arnold Schwarzenegger forearm, you will not have this problem, probably. That's a good way of getting rid of this problem.
Well, great.
So what are you doing in Argentina?
Yeah, what are you doing there?
Well, I've been living in South America for about 2 years. I was actually living in Bolivia prior to this, working on the UNM-UCSB Chimani project, which is a project that's looking into how health early in life affects longevity later in life in a natural population. Subsequent to that, I met my wife there, and she is from Argentina, and we just celebrated the birth of our first child, and that brings me to Buenos Aires.
Congratulations. Well,
do us a favor. I mean, that obviously, as you know, as a listener, is the sort of thing we try to do on the program. Hey, whatever you come up with, make sure we find out about it, will you?
Absolutely.
Excellent. Great. Thanks a lot for the call.
Congrats on your
baby. Thank you all so much.
Yep. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
800-462-7413. And a listener joins in now, Zorba, in St. Louis, Missouri. Hi.
Hello.
What's up?
Not much. I'm just here on vacation in Florida, actually, right now. But it's great to be on the show. I've always been a fan. Ever since I was a very small child, I've been listening to you guys. So it's great to finally be on the show.
Thank you very much. Nice of you to say. So, how can we help you?
I actually have a problem that is very non-traditional for your show. I am having trouble stabilizing my weight. I don't want to lose any more weight. I'm not going to say that I was a big, you know, person
sure.
before I had this problem, but 8 months ago, I was probably about 160 pounds. I'm
okay.
20 years old,
okay.
and I have, I'd say a pretty, vigorous exercise regimen. I'm also a vegetarian vegan. I should
mm-hmm.
also mention
okay.
that.
Right.
But I didn't work out a lot.
But just to mention people, when you're a vegetarian vegan, that means you don't eat dairy products
right.
and you don't eat
yes.
eggs.
Right.
And they are sources of, that's just a quick source of protein and fat, dairy products.
So it's harder. Good. It's tougher.
Yeah, it's
right.
more, because
exactly.
more difficult.
But
right.
I hadn't been exercising every day until 8 months ago. And
okay.
so I did up my exercise to lose a little bit of weight.
Okay.
But it's kind of gone to this extremity. I have gone from 160 pounds to about 125, and that sounds good. That sounds very healthy, but
mm-hmm.
I can't stop losing weight. I'm a size zero in my pants, and they're falling off of me.
Mm-hmm.
I want to stabilize my weight. I mean, it's getting a little ridiculous,
Right, right. So what do you eat that's non-vegan?
Well, occasionally I'll have yogurt,
mm-hmm.
or occasionally, maybe once a week I'll have some eggs,
mm-hmm.
but it's rare for me to eat it every day.
Okay. Got a great recommendation.
Okay.
First of all, you want to go to the store, you want to get a calorie book called Food King. They sell them at all the big bookstores, all the independent bookstores around. This little book costs about $8, $9, and it tells you the calories of everything. You can
right.
Google calories, too. But what you want to do after that, you want to go to mypyramid.gov, G-O-V. It's the food pyramid, and you put in your age, put in how much exercise you do, which is greater than 30 minutes a day. Out will pop out the number of calories you should have. It's a great little resource. If you're losing weight, you're calorie deficient for what you're doing. It's pure and simple. That's what happens. It's just like if people gain weight, they're eating too many calories. Now, starting the calories or stopping the calories, that's a different issue, but you need to know how deficient you are. Generally, if people are gaining weight, they're eating 250 to 500 calories more a day at minimum. And often, if people are losing weight, they're deficient by the same amount, around 250 to 500 calories a day. Then you have to find the best way to do it. The easiest way is to some sort of a vegan protein shake that you like. Because with shakes, you can put things in there. You can put in protein. You can put in beans. You can put in other things to make up a caloric drink that's dense that you may tolerate and that you may actually like. And that
okay.
would be my recommendation. Because what you need is you probably need more fat in your diet.
Right.
And you probably need more protein in your diet. Carbs are often not an issue. It's usually protein is the big issue with the vegan diet that you have to pay attention to. But fat
right.
is also the issue if you're losing weight. Tablespoon of fat is 100 calories. Tablespoonful of carbohydrate is only 45 calories.
Okay.
So,
I should mention that I don't want to gain all the weight.
No,
back
I know that.
Either.
But you want to look and see what you have. It might only be 250 calories a day
uh-huh.
or 125. So when you do a diary for 3 days, this will give you the answer. There's also a website called myfooddiary.com.
Right, I've seen that.
And it's a little website you put all the stuff on and figure out how many calories you should get. Figure out roughly, it's a rough approximation,
mm-hmm.
what you're getting. You're a little too deficient, and then find out what to fix it in a way that you like.
Okay.
And it might be adding, literally, it might be adding 6 eggs a week. That might be all we're talking about. Not very much. An egg is 125, 150 calories. 2 eggs are 300 calories. If you like eggs and you tolerate them and you'll be a little bit off the vegan into the vegetarian,
mm-hmm.
that's a way to do it.
Okay.
So,
all
and
right.
now you've
Thank
been listening.
You.
You've been listening since you've been a young girl. How wonderful! How wonderful! That is so neat to. So
thank
neat to
you.
See
My dad's a big fan. Also.
Oh, thank you. Well, thank you so much. Thanks for listening.
Thank you too.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
800-462-7413. Ann Zorba, a listener now in Springville, New York. Hi.
Hi, guys.
What's up?
I got a couple of questions. I'll give you a little background here.
Mm-hmm.
About 3.5 years ago, I had arthroscopic surgery, and they scraped some level 4 osteoarthritis from the knee. The operation provided negligible relief, and I thought that perhaps the lack of success was due to bending of the knee against the very tight binding I had around it. And when I got in and out of the car, I went up a few steps to get into the house after the operation. I didn't use crutches for about the first half a day following the operation. And do you think that that was responsible for the lack of success? Additionally, though, I want to mention I'm scheduled for another knee operation with another doctor now to undergo what they call, well, you guys know what, a partial lateral meniscectomy and a chondroplasty. Now, a week ago...
Don't you love those words? Partial lateral meniscectomy and...
He thinks and, that and, us guys know that. Zorba
right.
knows
yeah,
that.
That's right.
I don't know that.
I was thinking, you know, this is gobbledygook. You know, basically, yeah. It's the cartilage in your knee that's bad. They're going to take out the meniscus. That's a common word. And try to make the knee work better. As you said, it's that complex term. Getting to the issue of why it didn't work optimally, there are lots of reasons, and it's usually not one thing. It's that the science of surgery is based on, you know, on what we think works most of the time, and it doesn't work all the time. It's just like medicines don't work all the time, and, you know, you take a treatment, it doesn't work all the time. It just didn't work all the time in this case, and you'd like it to work all the time, but not everything.
Sort of like radio programs.
Radio programs do not work all the time.
Sometimes they work.
Thank you, Tom. I am so excited that you said that. Thank you, Tom.
Sometimes
you
the
know,
listeners are going
there?
Away
where
and drove.
Where did we get you? Where did we get you? So what is your other surgery that you're having done?
Well,
other knee or same knee?
Same knee. A week ago, here's the thing. About a week ago, I read in an article in Consumer Report that was based on research that appeared in the New England Journal of Medicine from 2001, and it claims orthoscopic surgery for arthritic knees doesn't do anything to improve the knees or relieve the underlying symptoms and may actually contribute to cartilage degeneration.
Well, no, I don't believe that at all. There are a number of issues. First of all, there was a New England Journal article that showed that cleaning out the knee, in other words, going into the knee and sort of getting rid of the stuff that's in there, there's debris that's floating, is worthless. It's a worthless procedure. And a lot of people are having that done. Well, I'll just clean out your knee. Nothing to do with the meniscus. I'll put fluid in and we'll clean it out and then you'll be better. And they had a very good study with sham surgery, hard to blind that, where little pokes were made and nothing was done, and they found there was no difference at all. So that may be what you're referring to. But arthroscopic surgery is extremely useful to remove meniscus and tack things down, and it's a great step forward in surgical procedures. It's very, very useful. But these things, as I say, are imperfect. I think you're doing the right steps. Certainly your revision makes sense. And follow the rehab exactly the way it should be. The next time, you know, this next time. Follow
it. You recommended it to go along with it.
Absolutely, and I would go through the rehab, and I would be 100%, as close to 100% as I could be in terms of the rehab. What I can do, what I can't do, good physical therapist, line that all up. That's what I would do.
All right, thanks a lot.
A pleasure.
Thank you very much for the call. We appreciate it. 800-462-7413, our toll-free number. Bored with breakfast? Do we have a recipe coming up for you?
It's a yummy one. Strawberry rhubarb oatmeal.
Coming up from Kentucky listener Elaine Hunter. More of your calls, too. Glad to have you with us here on Zorba Pasture on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Recipe time and then more of your calls. And this one, Zorba, sounds good to me looking over the recipe. Strawberry rhubarb oatmeal comes to us from a listener in Berea, Kentucky, Elaine Hunter, who happens to be on the phone with us right now. Elaine, hi.
Hi.
How you doing?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
We're fine. Where is Berea, Kentucky?
Actually, I don't live in Berea. I live out in the woods, but it's kind of central, pretty much central Kentucky.
Central Kentucky.
And you live,
I've been to central Kentucky. And
known for Berea College.
It is beautiful. Berea College. How big is that college?
It's a fairly small college. Mm-hmm. It's a private college.
Well, now, strawberry rhubarb oatmeal, how'd you come up with this recipe?
Well, a few months ago, I got a craving for a strawberry rhubarb pie.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no place in this neck of the woods to get strawberry rhubarb pie.
You mean a good restaurant where you can go get the pie?
No, no place. And I don't dare make a whole one and have it in my house.
Because it won't be there the next day.
Right, because that's too much temptation. So I try to think of something else I could do strawberry rhubarb. It would be more, you know, guilt-free, like you guys say.
Yeah.
And I thought of the strawberry rhubarb oatmeal.
Got it. A light bulb went off. Aha!
That is a great idea. And you know what? That's a great idea that didn't occur to me until now. One of the issues, of course, that we have with food is we tend to eat certain foods that we like the taste of, and a lot of those foods are high caloric foods that have empty calories, you know, high fructose corn syrup and lots of sugar and other stuff. Why not take the tastes and apply it to something healthy like oatmeal? It's a great idea. Strawberry rhubarb oatmeal, you could do other things. You could do things like cheesecake oatmeal. I'm serious. There are lots of things you can probably do with oatmeal, and then you're getting fiber and the goodness of oatmeal, and you may get the taste that you want to have. It's a wonderful, very simple recipe that's tasty.
So stay with us, Elaine, on this. We'll go through the ingredients and jump in whenever you want, if you'd like to correct something or add something, okay?
Okay. I mainly use the recipe on the oatmeal box for two servings.
For two servings.
Two servings. Okay. So here we go. Zorba?
Okay. 2 cups of water.
2 cups of water.
Now that's easy. I can get water anywhere.
Yeah,
that's
right.
The easiest thing
right.
at all. A stalk of rhubarb.
One stalk of rhubarb.
You know, you bring the rhubarb pretty much in a lot of places. You can get it a lot of the year, not all the year.
Do you grow your own, Elaine?
No, I don't. I could where I live, but I don't really. I'm not a farmer.
Okay.
Okay. Not a farmer.
Not a farmer. Good.
You can be a gardener and not a farmer, but right. Yeah, it's not a farmer. 6 strawberries.
6 strawberries.
That's right. 1 cup of oatmeal. Now, what kind of oatmeal do you use?
I use the old-fashioned.
Old-fashioned oatmeal. Okay, so 1 cup of old-fashioned oatmeal. You could probably use instant, but you know, but old-fashioned is good. They're just processed a bit differently. Teaspoon of cinnamon.
A little tea of cinnamon.
Mm-hmm. Teaspoon of cinnamon. Nutmeg. So do you use it out of the box, or do you sort of grate it out?
Either way.
I like to...
It's nice grated.
It's got a much better smell to it, and yeah. I've got it. You know, you buy them, and they're in the little jar, and you just grate it out, and it just has that
little
nice,
bit of nutmeg.
Pinch of salt. Sweetener of choice to taste. So what do you use?
Splenda.
I like Splenda.
A little bit of brown sugar.
Brown sugar is great.
Not great. Necessary.
Necessary.
Oatmeal.
Brown sugar is necessary in oatmeal. Splenda, of course, is made from sugar, and it's a manufactured sweetener. Stevia, we talked about that one.
Stevia
is also a natural product, very popular in Japan, mm-hmm. that is a sweetener too. Okay, so bring the water to a boil while it's boiling. Strip the outer layer of the rhubarb, leave a bit of red. Then slice the rhubarb into quarters. Okay, when the water boils, reduce the heat, add the rhubarb pieces, cook for about 10 minutes. Sounds good. It's got that little smell in the air then. Add the strawberries, oatmeal, cinnamon, nutmeg, salt, and sweetener, and cooked to the desired consistency. And then put it out on that little bowl, and if you want to, add a little bit of milk to it, some nice nice fresh 2% milk, 1% milk, and
little whole wheat toast, maybe a little croissant on the side.
Or some of the milk substitutes for a lot of people.
Yeah, you could have some soy milk on the side. So you like this recipe, huh?
Oh, I like it a lot. It's real, you know how lemonade is refreshing in the summer? Well, that strawberry rhubarb taste to me.
You know, I like rhubarb. I like strawberries. I have never had rhubarb other than in rhubarb pie.
This sounds good,
doesn't it? This sounds very good. And it's healthy because you look at it, when you analyze it, it's about 145, 150 calories. No cholesterol, of course. Only 2 grams of fat, which is absolutely minimal amount of fat. It's got dietary fiber. It's very important. It's got, I mean, one serving has 20% of the fiber you need for the whole day, a little bit of protein. I think anytime you can have a healthier breakfast, anytime you can have breakfast you want to have, is a good sign. So thank you.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for the call. Appreciate it, Elaine. And, of course, for sending us this recipe, Elaine, you get a free copy of our cookbook, Heart Healthy, Low Fat, Guilt-Free, and Tasty Recipes from the Kitchen of Zorba Pastor. And if you want to enter our recipe contest, just email your original low-fat recipe to us at
Zorba@WPR.org.
For today's recipe, send a stamped, self-addressed, business-sized envelope to Zorba Pastor on Your Health, 821 University Avenue, Madison, Wisconsin, 53706.
Or come to our website, ZorbaPastor.org.
Our toll-free number is 800-462-7413. Do you have a question for Zorba? Why not give us a call now? And a listener joins us now, Zorba, from Spokane, Washington. Hi.
Hi, Tom.
What's up?
Well, I have kind of an odd question. It's a question about mold.
Well, if you have an odd question, you've called the right guys.
Well, that's good.
So,
I like to eat bread, maybe bagels, or that big loaf bread that's sort of, it's made fresh and it doesn't have very many stabilizers in it. And so sometimes before I'm done with it, it's got little buds of mold sprouting.
Mm-hmm. Remind me the next time at your place never to have a sandwich there, okay?
Yeah, I know. Or cheese. I'll buy a big block of cheese, and by the time I get done with it, there's mold. Well, all right, so I'll take the mold off. I'll slice it off. But my son looks at me and rolls his eyes and says, "Mom, you are so weird, it's scary." And I keep on eating it, and then all of a sudden I thought, well, you know, is this bad for me? I mean, because when I take it off, I'm not that meticulous. So am I eating just a little penicillin, and it's no big deal?
It's not bad for you. First of all, it's kind of interesting. When we look at mold for good reason, we think, oh, maybe it's penicillin, you know, because penicillin comes from mold. Most mold, of course, has nothing whatsoever to do with it. Most mold is fine. You know, you cut it off because it just doesn't taste
good. Most mold.
Yeah, most mold is fine. So for the most part, with sugar and with cheese, it's okay. Now, mold on meat is not okay.
Oh, okay.
In other words, you don't want it. Well, but you know that, you see, because you said, oh, no, because you know, that is bad. Moldy beef is bad beef. You know, obviously, that's
But moldy is cheese?
Cheese is okay.
Moldy bread?
You bet. You cut the mold off the bread and you eat the rest of the bread. It's not very appealing, and many people will look at it and say, you're nuts. I'm never going to do something like that, and they throw it out. But the fact is, you can do that. But I have a question. Do you buy these large, enormous pieces of cheese so they sit in the refrigerator and get moldy? I mean, cheese lasts for a long time without getting moldy. Or are you not putting it in the right kind of a container?
The blocks that are about, I don't know, 6 inches long.
Why don't you get a smaller block of cheese? Nobody likes to look at mold. You know, obviously, you're not an obsessive compulsive housekeeper. I don't mean to say that, but
you're right.
You know, I mean, it kind of fits.
Zorba.
People who eat mold are not obsessive about the corners of their house.
Good listener, caller,
I
messy.
I can see through that. I did not say messy. I just said not obsessive compulsive. That's the other end of the spectrum. But smaller pieces of cheese, hey, that's it. Or freeze the cheese.
Well,
take it,
I
break
cut it,
in
it off. Yeah, it's just a little bit sometimes remains, and I'm just not fanatic about it.
Yeah, that's it. Now, from the bread point of view, that's an issue. If you buy good bread in a good shop and it doesn't have the mold retardant, the bread will get moldy in 2 or 3 days.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And that's the nature of it. Keep it in the refrigerator, and it won't get moldy quite as long. But that bread mold is okay. And
okay.
I've been. Have you ever done that, Tom? wanted a piece of bread and there's a little mold on it and ate the other part of the slice of the bread.
Oh,
I've done it. I've definitely done it. I've done it from college on. And it's one of those things that...
See, I'm not the only one.
Yes, you are not. That's right. Well, a lot of people don't admit it like Tom. He's probably never done it.
The bread I buy lasts forever and doesn't get moldy.
Tom buys white bread that's filled with chemicals.
No, I don't. It's whole wheat. It's whole wheat
whole
bread.
Whole wheat white bread. Whole wheat bread, it never gets moldy?
No.
Never.
And it tastes good, too. So shut up and leave me alone.
Just like home. Thanks for your call.
Thank you.
We appreciate it. Zorba, time now for a question from our Zorba Pastor on your health inbox. This one comes to us from Nancy in Madison, Wisconsin, who's looking for suggestions for a new drink. Nancy writes, I'm trying to find a non-alcoholic drink for evenings when I'm out with friends and I'm not in the mood for alcohol. My goal is to find something that the bartender can prepare that isn't loaded with sugar. Any suggestions?
Well, you know, when I go out to drink, if I don't want to have any alcohol, which happens, I have club soda with a twist. That's what I have. And if I want to have a drink that is a little bit sweet, I'll say to the bartender, put in a splash of orange juice or put in a splash of cranberry grape juice.
Oh, good idea.
And what happens is I might have one quarter orange juice or one quarter grapefruit juice, and you can tell them they'll do it, like half grapefruit juice, which is a low-calorie drink, half grapefruit juice, half club soda, and that's a very good drink. Or pure club soda, put in a twist, put in a couple of twists, say, you know, I want a lot of lime in there, and that's great. That's non-caloric completely.
Yeah, that's all real.
I don't like sweet drinks. I mean, there are times I like it, but I'm not a Pepsi or a Coke drinker. I've never had a lot of sweet drinks, so that's what I usually drink.
I was thinking non-alcoholic beer would work.
Non-alcoholic beer would work, but it's got calories in it, non-alcoholic beer. If you're looking for a non-caloric drink, that's not the one to get.
Yeah.
You know, non-alcoholic light beer still has some calories in it, too. So.
Yeah. But those are great suggestions.
The other thing is, ask the bartender. The bartender will tell you.
Oh, that's good.
I mean, bartenders love to give advice. They'll make up something really neat, a little bit of this, a little bit of that.
I assume, Shirley Temple does have a lot of sugar.
Of course, it's filled with sugar.
Yeah,
grenadine syrup and all that.
This doesn't have anything to do really with her question, but I was out with my cousins on a vacation recently, and we went to a restaurant and had drinks. I never have a mixed drink, maybe twice a year, and my mixed drink of choice is a Manhattan.
Okay.
I ordered it. Mm-hmm. Manhattan, please, straight up with a cherry. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
With bourbon and not brandy or something else. Mm-hmm. And my cousin looked at the server and said, and he'd like a little umbrella with that, too.
umbrella with that, too.
What a swipe.
I love
what
it. What a swipe. That's right. It's so specific. You want the umbrella with that,
like,
too.
That's a sissy drink. Right. A Manhattan is not a sissy drink.
That's right. That's
anyway.
Right. Sexist, but not sissy.
If our listeners have other ideas for non-alcoholic, non-sugar drinks, we'd appreciate those,
absolutely,
too.
Please.
As always, the best way to share your tips, comments, and suggestions is to send us an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
We'll be taking some more of your calls, and we have some really interesting research coming up. Oh, and by the way, a Stump the Doc is also coming up. We're loaded for the rest of this
stump
program.
Stump me.
And by the way, a medical myth buster, too. So, lots of reasons to stay tuned to Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. More of your calls coming up, but before our next one, Zorba, some info on postpartum depression. Interesting, new to me anyway, info. Not only affecting the mom, but the dad too.
Oh, absolutely. I find it a fascinating thing when you look at babies being born, parents' issues, especially first-time moms and dads. Here it is, you know, all of a sudden the mom goes from the center of attention to the fact that the baby is now the center of attention.
Right.
And often the dad can be marginalized. And there's a lot of issues here. And we think of mothers, and we're really aware. I used to deliver babies about postpartum depression. Are you depressed? And, yeah, and ask
but
those
now,
questions.
Aren't
but
there
this
also,
showed guys also suffer.
But aren't there, before we get to that, aren't there also physical reasons
well,
why,
there
the,
are a lot
mom,
of physical
why
reasons.
The mom gets?
The issues of postpartum depression have to do with a woman, with what's going on hormonally in the body, the fact that there's a baby to take care of, the fact that she is no longer the center,
yeah,
especially
but
if it's
the hormonal
mom.
Stuff isn't going on
absolutely,
with the dad.
No, not at all. But the issue is, this study showed dads suffer also. In other words, dads have postpartum depression. Obviously, it's not a physiological thing.
Right.
There are issues that are involved with dads, but about 14%, 12, 14% of the women who have babies have some significant postpartum depression, moderate to severe.
Right.
And the studies show these are 5,000 two-parent families. That's a lot. That as many as 10% of the dads may
almost
suffer.
Almost as many
also.
Dads as moms.
You bet. This was published in the journal Pediatrics. It's a very good journal. They looked at it, and the issues are often fathers, like moms, feel elation after birth, and they sort of have engrossment in the process, and then it tends to fade away. And
reality sets in.
Reality sets in.
Yeah.
But the things that tend to be risk factors are if the mom is very, very controlling, if the mom wants the baby all to herself and marginalizes the father, I'm breastfeeding, I'll do this, I'll do that, and sort of pushes the father out to the side. Often, the dad may feel frustrated sexually because there's often no sex involved and the mom is recovering. Emotionally, they're not interested in social relationships because there's the baby. Mm-hmm. And if the mom is very motherly and peripheral, dads often go to the periphery, and what they often do is then they work longer, they watch more sports, they drink more alcohol, they become more solitary, when in fact what happens is, especially if they're predisposed, they're tumbling into depression.
Interesting. All of these things you talked about, it seems to me, if we're aware of them or if new parents are aware of them, you could kind of deal
absolutely.
With it.
And that's exactly what the point of the article said, is we don't ask as doctors about it. We don't attend to it. We don't say, hey, how's the dad doing? How are you doing? Are you depressed? Is there anything going on? Fill out a questionnaire. Right. If you know it's a possibility, you can begin to make changes in it.
Yeah.
And that's the way you treat it. You treat it with behavioral changes. Sometimes you need to have medication with that. But recognizing the problem is the first step, and postpartum depression is not just a problem for mom. We now know it's often a problem for dad.
Our toll-free number is 800-462-7413. Zorba, let's see if we can help a listener now in Duluth, Minnesota. Hi.
Hi.
What's up?
Well, I was diagnosed about a month and a half ago with a hole in my lung, and after I went back to the doctor for some follow-up information, they told me that tall, slender people were much more likely to have this happen to them, and I'm wondering why that is.
Well, I'm a tall, slender person, more likely to have holes in our lungs?
Let me ask, did you have something called a bleb, B-L-E-B, that burst? Is that what happened to you?
No, I had an asthma attack, and from that they said that I had ripped a hole in
my
lung.
By the way, a bleb is a bubble that can occur in the lung, a little kind of an air bubble. It looks like an air bubble in those things that, you know, when you're packing things.
Mm-hmm.
And then it can burst and can produce a collapsed lung partially from that. Sometimes from an asthma attack, yes, you can have an asthma attack. So basically your body heals, but you take the outside of the lung, bursts a little hole, and then part of that lung can collapse. Did you have a lot of chest pain with this?
Yes, I did.
Right.
I did.
And trouble breathing. When you took a deep breath, it was tough to take a deep breath.
Mm-hmm.
Right. It can be an issue. It does happen with more slender people. It happens with people with asthma, chronic lung disease, people who have trauma to their lungs. Those are all things that can
but
cause
But why it. Would a tall, slender person
well,
be more
it
likely?
Well, it's just more common than that. I don't know. You just stumped me, Tom. I don't know. It's a good question. I'm not sure why. You've had asthma for years?
Yeah, for about 10 years.
Yeah, what do you take for it?
I currently take Advair.
Advair, which is a very good drug. I think it's the drug of choice for that. And has that helped your asthma a lot?
Yep, it works really well.
Yeah, it's a really, really good drug. So you had an asthma attack. How often do you get these attacks?
You know, I've had it about 10 years, and that was the first time I'd ever been in the hospital.
Great. So, in other words, you haven't had it for a long time. Your asthma then sounds like it's in good control.
Yeah.
Really good control. How long did they say it'll take you to heal? Usually it's a few weeks before that pain goes away.
It took me about a month or so to get over it.
Yeah, it takes that long. What happens is you've got air in the cavity with the lung, and it just takes a long time for that air to absorb and for the body to heal. And if you're lucky, it may not happen again. you know, doesn't mean just because it happens once, doesn't mean it won't happen again. Unfortunately, for some people, it does happen frequently, and sometimes they need to actually go in and put some mesh in that area or do some other procedures that keep it from happening. But it sounds like your asthma is in good control. What do you do for a living?
I'm a teacher.
You're a teacher, so you're not in a smoking environment. Those kids don't smoke in school anymore, right?
No.
And you don't smoke, right?
No.
Just checking. You would be surprised how many people with asthma smoke and then say, oh, I just can't stop. And I think, you just can't stop? You're wheezing, you have asthma, and you're smoking?
Yeah.
What's wrong with this picture?
I'm just thinking, Zorba, maybe we tall, slender people also have thinner lining walls on our lungs.
You can think whatever you want to, Tom, and maybe it's true. I have no idea. I don't know. But maybe there's somebody out there who can tell us why tall, slender people often, if they have an asthmatic attack or something else, burst out part of their lungs. Yeah. Maybe somebody knows that answer.
Thanks a lot for the call. We appreciate the call. Zorba, time now on the show for our Myth Buster. Today's myth involves chocolate. And I guess what some might say, I would say, would be a positive side effect. Is chocolate an aphrodisiac?
That's a good question, and that is a myth.
Go away.
It is a myth. Now, we know that chocolate makes you feel good. Like, I love eating chocolate. Psychologically, it makes you feel good. You know, we know that chocolate is associated with romantic things,
yes,
such as Valentine's Day.
Yeah.
Honey, I really love you. I'll give you chocolate. And, mm-hmm, you know, you go over to somebody's house and you bring chocolate. But an aphrodisiac is something that stimulates physically sexual desire. You take it and you want to have sex.
Right.
That's an aphrodisiac.
Right.
Chocolate has the brain in between, and there was a study that was done. A study done out of Italy. We know the Italians eat lots of chocolate because they like chocolate, and their chocolate is really good. Now, they couldn't blind the study because you can't blind the taste of chocolate. This is chocolate. That's cardboard. This is nothing. Couldn't blind it, but they found no difference in women. These are women who they studied,
not guys,
women, because you give chocolate to women usually. Yep. There was no difference in women who consumed one good piece of good chocolate a day, women who consumed 4 good pieces of chocolate a day, and women who had no chocolate a day. The amount of sex that they had was exactly the same. Therefore, that study shows, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that it is not an aphrodisiac. Yeah. But chocolate may be important from a psychological point of view.
I was just going to say that. I was just going to say that. You can't tell me that the guy presenting a nice box of chocolates to the sweetie is not going to make that sweetie a little more amenable to a romp, a Valentine's Day romp.
That's a different story, Tom. That's a different story.
If you have a myth you'd like Zorba to burst, or if you have a question that you think could stump our favorite family doc, we'd love to hear from you. Just send us an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
Our toll-free number is 800-462-7413. And Zorba, our next caller is with us from Norman, Oklahoma. Hi.
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 How can we help?
My husband has had 2 maternal uncles who developed Alzheimer's.
Okay.
And we wonder if he's at an increased risk and if there's anything we can do to lessen that. Uh-huh.
So his parents did not develop Alzheimer's?
His parents did not, and his grandparents did not.
Yeah, I doubt if he's at an increased risk at all. There are some things you can do, though, if you're worried about Alzheimer's, but I don't think the risk with the parents is higher, but the risk beyond a parent is not. How old were they when they got it, by the way?
In their early 60s.
Oh, well, that's did they smoke?
I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a big issue because half of all Alzheimer's is not Alzheimer's. Small infarct dementia, this means little blood vessels in the brain clog off, often associated with drinking and smoking, but not always, associated with hardening of the arteries. And they cause dementia just like Alzheimer's, and you can't differentiate between them. In other words, the people can look the same. So they may not have had Alzheimer's. They may have had small vessel disease due to lifestyle things. How's his cholesterol?
I think it's good. It hasn't been checked for a couple of years.
That's an important thing because we know that getting your cholesterol control is very important. How's his blood pressure?
Fine.
Okay, blood pressure should be absolutely fine. I would take an aspirin every day because that'll help you not with Alzheimer's but with small infarct strokes, these small little strokes. It'll help you with that. I take a multivitamin because it has folic acid in it, and that is more likely to reduce homocysteine levels, and that's been associated possibly with dementia. And then if you're really afraid, there's some evidence that anti-inflammatory drugs may reduce the risk of dementia. So two Aleve tablets once or twice a day may reduce the risk of dementia. There's some evidence for that. And those are kind of the things I would do.
All right. Thanks very much.
You're welcome.
Appreciate the call. Thank you. Zorba, one little quick note before we leave. It's kind of a fun stump the doc question. And Zorba, this is a stump the doc that you don't have a chance
right,
to
Tom,
get right.
Not a come prayer. On, Tom. Throw you'll, it at me.
You'll,
come on.
You'll remember on. Recently we were talking about Seltzer, and I mentioned Chuckles
yes.
the Clown
yes.
from the Mary Tyler
yes.
Moore
Chuckles
Show.
Chuckles the Clown. That's
you
right.
know
that's
the
right.
Mary Tyler Moore Show.
That's right. I do.
Okay.
I remember now, Mary Tyler Moore.
I know
she's my icon.
No, she's not okay. your icon. And I know you're really not up to date on any pop culture,
no,
Zorba,
no,
but
no, no.
We received this little tidbit from Patricia in Wisconsin. Here's the question. How did Chuckles the Clown meet his untimely demise? What did I say? What did I say? I think, maybe I'm wrong about this, I think this is the only episode that Chuckles the Clown appeared on was as a deceased at his funeral on one of the Mary Tyler
right.
show. I remember this,
yeah.
too.
I don't remember it at all, no.
According to Patricia, and she's right, Chuckles the Clown was killed by an elephant while dressed like a peanut. You laugh, and I laugh, and I remember the show. Here's a, the show was the show. The show,
like
the show was the funeral for Chuckles the Clown. Everybody was sitting there being morose
yes,
and sad.
Right. Yeah.
And
okay.
and somebody, I've forgotten who, was going on
yeah.
about Chuckles
okay.
the Clown,
okay. yeah.
A
yeah.
little song, yeah. a little dance, a little seltzer in his pants. And Mary Tyler Moore is sitting at the funeral, starting to smile, trying to control her emotions, and then breaking out in laughter at the funeral for this poor guy who they're mourning.
Chuckles
the killed by
an elephant.
While dressed like a peanut. Well, Patricia.
Thank you.
I think
thank you
found
Patricia.
The perfect way to stump Zorba. But
you betcha.
We want to hear about your medical mind benders, too. Just send us your Stump the Doc questions, too.
Zorba at WPR.org.
And for a copy of this week's recipe and all things Zorba, visit us on the web.
At ZorbaPastor.org.
Don't forget, you can bug our producer anytime at 800.
Day or night, 24/7.
800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's produced by Adam Friedrich. Our executive producer is Charles Monroe Kane. Brent Kohlberg is the guy trying his hardest not to electrocute us. Gigi Holland fills your recipe requests. Our theme music by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, hoping you're with us for the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 0825Z. More on healthy living, including heart-healthy recipes, podcasts, show archives, and listener feedback, is available online at ZorbaPastor.org. That's ZorbaPastor.org.
PRI, Public Radio International.